This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Malaysia is one of only 25 countries that denies Malaysian women the right to confer nationality on their children on an equal basis as Malaysian men. And many are calling for Malaysia to amend the federal constitution to allow both men and women to confer their citizenship on their children born outside of Malaysia through the same process. And so I'm going to find out more about this from Bina Ramanan. She is the lead coordinator and co-founder of the Foreign Spouses Support Group, who are leading the campaign for gender equal citizenship for Malaysians. And Suri Kemper, she is the program manager of Musawa, and she was a mother affected by this ruling, and she's going to share her experiences of this tedious citizenship application process. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for having us, Juliet.
My pleasure, my pleasure. So, Bina, maybe we can start with you, the Foreign Spouses Support Group. I mean, you are, as I mentioned, leading this campaign for equal citizenship. But briefly, can you tell me about the work that you guys do?
Yes. So, Foreign Spouses started way back in 2009. And we were just thought that as mothers, it was quite hard to raise up Malaysian children in this country. So we just wanted to help a few others along the way. Mm-hmm. But it's really grown into a huge, big community, because as time goes and as borders opened up, there are more number of transnational marriages. Mm-hmm. And sometime in 2012, we started getting these cases of citizenship where Malaysian mothers said that they were having difficulties conferring citizenship on their children born overseas. Mm. At that time, we thought that shouldn't be a problem, because in 2010, there was an administrative procedure that said that children could of Malaysian mothers could be registered, but it was not happening. Right. So from there, we started taking on more citizenship cases, basically because these mothers said that they were foreign spouses overseas. We also had a connection with the Ministry of Women, so we could, you know, discuss with them the issue and move the issue forward. But not much has changed since then. Mm-hmm. So we had the campaign to push this forward.
All right. So, okay, as I mentioned, Malaysia is one of the 25 countries in the world that denies women the right to confer nationality on their children on an equal basis as men. So, I mean, maybe you can just dissect that, you know, explain what that means exactly. Yeah.
So, under Article 14, a Malaysian man is able to confer citizenship on his child through operation of law. So he merely confirms the status of citizenship on his child when it's born overseas. Mm. But the same rule is not applicable to women. So they can't claim Article 14 because it's only for the Malaysian father. Mm-hmm. So the Malaysian mothers, when they give birth to children born overseas, actually don't have this facility and are made to apply under Article 15.2, which takes around 2 to 3 years for the process to get a response. And very often it is a rejection and they are not provided with a reason so that, you know, they would be able to resubmit their documents. So when they resubmit, they are resubmitting perhaps the same application. Sure. And it gets rejected again.
And without reason, as you mentioned. Yes. Okay. And so, okay, so fathers with children born abroad can apply for children's citizenship at the High Commission?
At the High Commission.
In the country where they're currently residing.
That's right. And within 3 days, some have said 3 days, some have said it took 3 weeks for them to get my kid.
Okay.
So it's a very easy and streamlined process. It should be the same for Malaysian mothers.
Yes, it should. But okay, so mothers in similar scenarios, they have to come back to Malaysia to make the application?
Sometimes they have, it's not consistent. Okay. The rule is not consistent. Some of them apply overseas, some come back to Putrajaya and then put in the application. Mm. So they're getting different responses from various high commissions.
Okay, all right. And I mean, Suri, you experienced this yourself. I mean, both as a mother and also as a daughter, you experienced that, am I correct?
That's right. So for me, it was an intergenerational problem. My mother was married to a German and both my sister and I were born in Germany. So that basically meant we did not get our citizenship until we were 18 years old. And of course, during that time, my mother had come back to Malaysia. I think when we started standard one here, I was in standard one and my primary school and my sister was in kindergarten in Johor. And so from that time up until I was 18, we were on various number of visas. We had to, thank God we lived in Johor, which meant we could cross over to Singapore quite easily. Sure. It varied from having to go every 3 months to every 6 months to then, getting a, basically every 6 months, yeah?
Yeah. And once you're in school, I think these days they give you a student pass.
A pass?
Yeah, back then we didn't get a student pass per se, but I remember frequent trips. I mean, we made enough trips to Singapore. But, I mean, the problem then also becomes, and I had this problem with my daughter because she, I married an American citizen. And my daughter was born in the U.S. And so, and even though I had called the embassy while I was there. So I'd done my homework. You know, yeah. I knew there were problems. I obviously faced the same problems. I called the embassy. I said, I am about to deliver. But of course, once I finish my master's, I am planning to go back. It just so happens that her birth will coincide with the end of my master's. And thereafter, I'm planning to live my life in Malaysia, right? That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, no problems, Puan. You can just, all you have to do is register her birth within the first 6 months. It doesn't matter whether you do it here or whether you do it back in Malaysia. And since I was planning to head back to Malaysia right after, I was just going to do it in Malaysia, which is fine. It still fell within the 6 months period.
Sure.
And then when we came back, I was denied that. They said, okay, well, yes, but you have to submit an application under Article 15.2, which means it is conferred upon you by
registration.
Yep, by registration. And so I was like, wait a minute, does that mean she has to wait until she's 18? Is it going to take that long again? And this time I'm living in KL. I'm living and working in KL. So there's a problem here. You know, it's going to be expensive to make these visa runs. Mm. I can't just up and buy a ticket every couple of months and fly her down just because I'm married to a foreigner. The assumption often is that if you're married to a foreigner, you have money.
Yes.
So it shouldn't be a problem for you to fly or make these visa runs. And then the problem is also then dealing with immigration, right? You make these visa runs a couple of times and then they say, oh, well, this is a little suspicious. You know, why do you keep having to do these visa? And you get a lot of flack with immigration officers. Like, why are you doing this? And again, sometimes because the trickle down with frontline immigration officers isn't the same with everyone. Mm. So you have some that understand and then some that don't and some that really give you a hard time and say you have to come into the office at Putrajaya, you have to get another stamp on your visa a month before it expires, some on the day it expires, on the exact date that it expires, you have to leave the country and come back and get a stamp. So, you know, there's all sorts of varying and inconsistent demands that are made on you as a parent. Mm. And it doesn't matter whether these clash with your work demands at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you have parents who are then have to take leave from work, and sometimes in a lot of cases when you're married to a foreigner and you're living here, it is the wife, by virtue of being a Malaysian citizen, that is working. And oftentimes the husband is, if lucky, you know, able to work, has a work permit. But in a lot of instances, as was the case in mine, my ex-husband was not able to work because he didn't have a work permit here.
Right.
So I was the breadwinner.
Mm.
I was the person who had to make the visa runs. I was the person who had to make the trips to Putrajaya. I was the person who had to take my child out of school.
Mm.
So it all really, like, I was that linchpin that really held everything together.
Yeah. And why, you know, why put this kind of stress on you, a Malaysian citizen, your young daughter? You know, it's completely unnecessary, especially when you see that the men don't have to go through that same process.
None of those same demands are made of them. In fact, my sister now is going through the same case. She married a Dutch man, but gave birth to her children in Australia. They have that problem as well. And she really has to struggle, you know, between work and she's a specialist. So she's a rheumatologist.
Okay.
And because of these problems, they're even considering moving away again because it's really difficult to hold it all together. And her husband's getting frustrated with not being able to work properly. And, you know, so it becomes a really trying time for families, not just the immediate family, as we have seen in a lot of cases with the campaign. It's also the extended family. So the mother, the grandparents of the children, they're all affected by this because it's really a stressful time. And then especially when you have kids who are then about to go to school. And you are told by various schools, especially if you're trying to go to a government school, then you're told by various schools whether you can or cannot, because it varies across schools and the decisions that headmasters make, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have that prerogative to say, yes, this child can come to this school or not. So again, you have inconsistencies. And again, you have this entire process is fraught with a lot of stress and tension for parents.
Mm-hmm. Just causing a lot of stress within the families as well. But how did you manage? Because you did manage to get a citizenship for your daughter, am I correct?
I did, yes. But I have to say...
You've got to tell the story now.
There was a tweet because, involved, I know.
Yeah, this is rather special and this is something that we always remember.
Yeah, but I have to say, I mean, before, yeah. on the offset, that this is a story that is... completely by chance. This yes. happened by chance. Unfortunately, it is not the norm.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was I had applied for citizenship for my daughter. And the first time around, it took about 4 years before we got a response. During that time, I had been called in for one interview, brought in my daughter for that interview, and I had been asked a bunch of questions. Some I thought were rather inappropriate, like, are you getting a divorce? And I said, you know, what does that have to do with the application?
Yeah.
And they said, oh, well, it's one of those things that, put weight on your application. I'm like, oh, where's this written? I didn't see anything about, like, being divorced factoring into the application. And they're like, oh, we have a list. I'm like, oh, where is this list? They're like, oh, we can't tell you. If you had the list, then, you know, you try and fulfill these requirements.
Oh, dear God. Yeah. God forbid.
Right. God forbid I actually fulfill the requirements before I put in an application, lest I waste my time.
Yes.
In any case, so that application got rejected and I was quite annoyed because it was a very tedious process. And at that point, I was already a single mother and it was really taking its toll. In any case, what happened was I had submitted, I was in the process of resubmitting the application. And usually they try and tell you, you know, it's normal for the first application to get rejected because we reckon if you really want it, if you really want the citizenship, then you'll apply again.
What
it's almost like a test of loyalty, yeah?
Okay.
And I'm not the first mother who's been told this.
Given
that reason. And it's a very informal reason as well. And so what happened then was, it just so happened that something broke out online about a citizenship case, and I tweeted Datuk Sri Shamuddin, who was the then Home Affairs Minister,
mm-hmm.
and I said, I see, you know, this is the problem with obtaining for women. Malaysian women have no equal right to obtain citizenship for their children. And this is such a problem. And he said, oh, that shouldn't be the case. You know, you should have, we've actually issued a 2010 administrative amendment, which allows mothers, which facilitates the process for Malaysian mothers. I'm like, yes, I'm well aware. I have your newspaper clipping right in front of me with the announcement. But unfortunately, I was like, if that's the case, you know, then why was my daughter's citizenship application rejected? Mm-hmm. And then he went ahead and tagged, of course, you don't have the answers, you tag your head of immigration, which I'm still grateful for because immigration, head of immigration then said, I think his name was Encik Ahmad Alias. He said, oh, that shouldn't be the case. Your daughter should be offered, should be given the option of dual citizenship up until the age she's 18.
Right.
Then she has to choose because Malaysia doesn't by law allow dual citizenship. I'm like, yes, but that didn't happen. Oh, okay. So immediately, Datuk Sri Shamuddin then said, I will assign my special officer to your case. I submitted through his special officer. I submitted the application again. And within, I think, 4 to 5 months, the process took about 4 to 5 months, but within that period, my daughter's citizenship was approved, which was fantastic.
So you're one of the lucky ones, though.
But it was also completely by chance. Yeah. And I remember having this conversation with his special officer saying, you know, it's really fantastic that you're helping me, but what about all the other mothers who are struggling to go through this? I mean, obviously, the administrative amendment didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
We've
mm-hmm.
tried it. It was announced in 2010. It was at that point 2012, you know, and mm-hmm. like obviously there's nothing that's sunk in or taken root mm-hmm. in terms of facilitating these procedures for mothers. And they're like, yeah, we're working on that too. But up until today, and that's why we, like, thank God we have the Foreign Spouses Support Group, which is actually launching and pushing for this campaign to expedite, you know, something so, which is really such a basic right. At the end of the day, should Malaysian mothers be given the equal right to confer citizenship onto their children? And clearly, yes. You know, yeah. Clearly the answer is yes.
It is vital that they are given equal rights to citizenship of their children, because it impacts not just their lives, it impacts the lives of their children. It also impacts the life of the family. The family unity is threatened. The extended family is put to stress. So there are many reasons for women who wanting to come back. Some want their children to enjoy their culture and to be, you know, immersed in the in their culture, in Malaysian culture. The religion plays an important part as well. So they want it to come back. And then you have those who want to come back to take care of their elderly, right?
Their parents.
Yeah. Bear in mind, many of them are professionals. Women like Zuri who have studied overseas, okay, and some of them, their husbands are also professional, like your sister is a professional. And when they leave, Malaysia is losing that. We're completely mooning about the brain drain, but yet we are facilitating this brain drain by not making it convenient for them, for the mothers and their families, for the Malaysian women and their families, their husbands and children to relocate them here. So that has to be facilitated as well.
And at the same time, it's a particular section of our own citizens whom we make it difficult for.
Women.
That's half our population whom we make it difficult for.
Exactly.
To confer citizenship, lest they marry a foreigner and give birth abroad. And it's such a technicality, right? It's such a geographical question.
Yeah.
Sorry, I couldn't come back because I was studying abroad. I had married a foreigner, studied abroad or something, gave birth because my health insurance is tied to the hospital or whatever facilities abroad. And couldn't come back because it really is a lot of money to come back.
Of course. And you have to, the amount of time, because, you know, you're generally not allowed to travel in your final trimester. So you need to make allocations for that, the time before, the time after the birth. It's ridiculous.
Absolutely. Absolutely
and
ridiculous.
Bear in mind, you're just starting your life. You're starting your family life on this. You know, this is such a setback. You can't give up your job for 6 months and come here to have to give birth and get citizenship.
And they have maternity leave some more, you know. They're like, oh, banyak cantik. You want to take so leave for so long.
I'm speaking today to Bina Ramanan. She's the lead coordinator and co-founder of the Foreign Spouses Support Group. And Suri Kemper, she's the program manager at Mutsawa. And they're both discussing how we need gender equal citizenship for Malaysians. We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll share more stories about some women who are still trying to get citizenship for their children. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. In the studio with me today are Bina Ramanan. She is the lead coordinator and co-founder of the Foreign Spouses Support Group, and Suri Kemper. She's the program manager for Mutsawa. Suri, well, she had some issues getting citizenship for her daughter. She was one of the lucky ones who managed to get citizenship for her daughter, but it is a tedious process, as Suri mentioned, as Suri told us before the break. And Bina, you are leading the campaign to, you know, to fight this. And so, like we said, Suri is one of the lucky ones, but there are many, many others who are not so lucky. I mean, can you tell us some of the stories? Because you did hold a forum and a lot of the mothers came to share their stories. What were some of those stories?
Yeah, some of the mothers actually came from overseas to Malaysia. So there were mothers from Philippines, there was mothers from France, there was plenty of them who had come from overseas to Malaysia. To actually to show that it is important for them to get citizenship. So we had one case of Naveena, whose elder child was able to get citizenship even though was born overseas, and thank God for that. And the second child actually is only a 19-month-old child, and it's been left behind here because Naveena had to go back to school her elder son. A 19-month-old child is left without his parents, without his family. They need to be reunited. This child needs his citizenship, you know, and on an urgent basis. And the stress and the trauma the mother is going through with this separation, with the amount of money they have to spend come back to Malaysia.
She's based in France.
To come and see her child.
Yeah.
So this should not happen to any family, because I think Malaysia places a lot of importance on family unity. Yeah. We also have another case of Aini, who's stuck in Saudi because her two children are without citizenship. She said she didn't even realize that it's going to be such a big problem for her. They need speech therapy. They need to be schooled. She wants them to be schooled in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. But they don't have access to the father's citizenship because Aini knows that it's very important for her to get Malaysian citizenship and she wants Malaysian citizenship for her children. Mm-hmm. She's stuck over there because she can't come back. The children don't have travel documents.
Right.
Yes. So we have various reasons why Malaysian women are coming back and want to come back. And it also impacts the children in many ways because not all of them have access to national schools.
Mm.
So if they have to put them in international school, it's going to be quite expensive. If they are in national schools, they are treated as international students. So they don't have access to buku pinjamin, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Or they may not have access to the healthcare that goes on, that, you know, you have the regular healthcare checks that goes on for children.
Mm-hmm.
They are socially excluded and isolated, even in their own, even in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
So this should not be the treatment to children of Malaysians.
Mm-hmm.
Bear in mind, they are Malaysian children.
And as you mentioned, for her, for Aini, yes. Her child needs some therapy as
yes,
well. And
that's right.
Therefore, there's no access to that as well. So we're assuming every child is healthy and, you know, not in need of any of these special needs. But they are, of course, and they are very costly. And it's not like just because you're married to a foreigner or you're based overseas that you have
the access.
Access to all that kind of funds for these sorts of things. And I think another thing in Avina's case, her son had to be... her eldest son got it, but her younger one didn't. And was she given any reasons as to why that happened?
As she told us, she had been 12 times to JPN and it's under process. That's what is...
No particular reason. I think she was saying with her eldest, he was issued a travel document when she wanted to come back the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it says on the travel document that the holder of this document is a Malaysian. Right. That's the issue, that's what it's stated on the travel document. And so when she came back, she went to Jabatan Pendaftaran Negara or the National Registration Department and submitted that and they issued her a passport, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Come second child, same thing happened. And she had come back because her father was on his deathbed. Yeah.
It was
one of those issues where
there was no choice.
There was no choice. And so she brought her eldest and her second, her youngest then, back. And same thing, but this time around, when she went to the National Registration Department, they said, oh, sorry, we can't issue you a passport because you'll have to apply for citizenship first. Sorry. So these inconsistencies make it's not just administrative inconsistencies because we know they've tried administrative amendments. They just don't work. The real root issue, if we really want to resolve this problem, needs to be an amendment to the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
It cannot just be a pass at, oh, we've tried to fix it, and really someone who can't is just, you know, too lazy to deal with the bureaucratic process. That really isn't the case. These mothers have been through much, and now she's stuck in Malaysia. And, the most tragic thing about her story is she said, you know, in an effort to come back and see my dying father, I have now separated both my children from their father, who is in France. And and when she talks about it, it really breaks your heart, you know, to see how she's like, I can't leave my child here,
mm-hmm.
who now cannot travel by virtue of being denied citizenship, of a bureaucratic process.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really tragic tale and hers isn't the only one.
Am I correct in saying that there's great discretionary power that's given to the Home Minister in granting citizenship. And, I mean, this obviously needs to change, I would say.
Well, there is a lot of power but that's granted through the Home Minister. But it really should be, and the way I think the National Registration Department and, of course, the Home Affairs Ministry looks at it is as a bureaucrat, as a process, as an administrative
mm-hmm.
process.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the lack of clarity and the lack of a consistent timeline which allows mothers to carefully plan out their future. Like, do we know if we're stuck here for a year or three or five? How do we plan for the children's future? Do we take, what kind of plans do we put into place for their schooling, for their health care? How much money do we need to save? How much money do I tell my husband to send over? How, you know, all of these questions are up in the air when you cannot plan. And this is the problem, really the fundamental, again, it goes back to the fundamental root of the problem, which is the Constitution doesn't guarantee women the equal right to confer citizenship. Because men, at the end of the day, do not have this problem. Malaysian men are not put through the ringer to pass on their citizenship to their children.
Mm-hmm. I think it was Ivy who said that, you know, when these laws were reinforced, it was reinforcing a very patriarchal, very false sort of notion that children have to follow the father's citizenship.
Absolutely. And that might have worked at one point in history, but clearly women are moving about, women are studying abroad, women are marrying foreigners. And this is, at the end of the day, what it comes down to is just punishing women for marrying foreigners, marrying men who are not Malaysian.
Or daring to give birth overseas.
How dare you?
How dare you? Like, I think there was one case of a lady who gave birth in Philippines because she didn't know she was pregnant, correct? Yeah. And when she went to the Philippines for a very good project for her work, she had to give birth there.
Yeah. And she actually had planned to come back, but, you know, sometimes you have complications. So it was dangerous for her to come back at that time. So she gave birth in the Philippines unknowingly that she's, you know, her child is going to remain, you know, will not get citizenship so easily. Mm-hmm. She's back here now with her child and they are on short-term visas. So until the child goes to school, they get a six-month visa. Some are lucky to get the 6 months visa. Some keep going for visa runs if their father is not present. And I can't understand why they are asking for the father to be present because sometimes the marriage has not worked. So she's come back. She's come back for a short while. Mm-hmm. She's come back for a period where she wants her children to be educated here. So, and then once you go to school, then you go onto a student pass, you know, and it's heartbreaking for the mothers. You're putting so much of trauma on them. So that's why it's necessary that the law is amended to give equal rights to Malaysian women. Malaysian women are not second class citizens.
We hope not, but sometimes when you see things like this, you begin to wonder. And I mean, the impact on children especially, that is something that really needs to be taken into consideration. I mean, I think your daughter was all right, Suri, but it was also a very stressful time for her as well, wasn't it?
Yes, for her it was. I mean, for a long time it was like, why don't I have citizenship? Why am I different? Why? Oh. When we had to go get citizenship, you know, obviously go for the interviews and whatnot, she'd be like, how come I don't have it? How come everybody? How come my friends do? Mm. Am I different?
Yeah.
You know, why are they special? And I'm just like, no, you're special. Yeah, it's coming. You know, it's coming. They're just a little bit slow in realizing that yours is coming. But you know, you have to, like, she already looks a little bit different. You know, and so I had to do a lot of talking and sitting down and trying to explain to her that she was not different from any other child. And those are clearly the stories that we hear from the children who of the mothers who are involved with the campaign as well. But I mean, and even more heartbreaking is, like, I remember I went to government school. And I think the implementation was a little bit more lax, or maybe I was just one of the, again, lucky, blessed enough to have been able to go to school and then be able to represent. I went to a convent and I was able to represent the school in a lot of various competitions for sports, you know, so even at the national level. So, which was really, really exciting for me then. But the stories that we hear now from a lot of the parents involved in the campaign is that, I mean, their children, some of them have managed to go to national schools, but unfortunately are prevented from
participating,
representing the school at the inter-school level or even at the national level. And a lot of them are very, very talented. These are smart kids. Good homes. They have ample opportunity, ample training, you know, to make a name for themselves and make a name for the schools that they're in.
Yeah.
And yet they're stopped from representing their schools simply by virtue of this bureaucratic problem. And, you know, some people wave it away and say, oh, it's not a big deal. But it really is.
It really is when you get down to it.
And what are you going to tell your child? Sorry, you can't represent the school because you're not a citizen, which then makes you different. You orang luar, you know, you're a foreigner, you're a foreign child.
But you also lost out the opportunity of scholarships, isn't it?
That's true. I was a straight A student. Yeah. I had straight A's for my UPSR, for my PMR at that point. Straight A's, but again, and I would have had the opportunity to have a scholarship, but, and it's not like my mom was rich, you know what I mean? Like, we're not from a well-off family. And so I lost out on the opportunity for scholarship, but thank God my mom was quite resilient and made it work for both me and my sister. But, you know, it really goes to show that there's a problem with the system.
Mm-hmm. And it's an unnecessary problem. It's something
and
that can
not be. In the best interest of the child.
Exactly.
Malaysia is a signatory to the child rights of the child convention. So basically, they should look into the best interest of the child.
So you did have a forum a couple of weeks ago.
That's right.
YB Hannah, you came and there was a lot of support. And there are more parliamentarians, I believe, who are lending their support. But
sadly,
I think nobody from the Home Ministry came for the event. I mean, what are you hoping for?
Well, we just we call upon the government of Malaysia to end gender discrimination in the citizenship laws and enact reforms without delay, and to uphold equal citizenship rights on both Malaysian women and men, because every child whose parents one at least is a citizen, regardless of whether they are born within Malaysia or outside, irrespective of the parents' marital status, should be accorded citizenship.
I think at the end of the day, this is such a basic issue and basic issue of rights, especially in the 21st century, that we don't think it is a problem for this to be a nonpartisan issue. This should be something that all MPs support in all political parties. I know that, like, there have been after the forum, there were some, political trolls online that tried to frame it as there's a political agenda behind this, you know, there's a race element to this, but that really isn't the case. At the end of the day, this is a quick win, not only for the government, but for all MPs that support the issue. Mm-hmm. It is, at its core, an issue of fundamental and equal rights for all citizens.
And Bina, I mean, I know there are other categories of inequality as well that still also need to be addressed.
Yes.
Maybe you could walk us through those as well.
Yeah. So the other inequality for women is the inability for a Malaysian woman to obtain citizenship for her husband on a similar basis as a Malaysian man.
Mm-hmm.
So a Malaysian husband can get citizenship for his wife, for his foreign wife, 2 years after she gets her PR. But that PR, of course, is really mired in a lot of delays. So it doesn't come early. It comes probably close to retirement. Everyone's worried because if your husband passes away in that time, the PR gets withdrawn and you have Malaysian children involved. So really something has to be done about that. But for a Malaysian woman, it takes much longer for her husband to get citizenship. Actually, he has no benefit in marrying a Malaysian woman because he gets citizenship by naturalization, which any other man has access to, which is in about 20 years. Women are worried. Malaysian women are worried because what would happen if she passes on? And who's going to take care of the children here in Malaysia? And her parents would be here who would give that support.
Mm-hmm.
So this has to be also considered. And the other inequality in the citizenship law is the category where a man who is unmarried or for some technical reason, their marriage may not be registered here in Malaysia, but has his child here or overseas, and the child will have to follow the citizenship of the mother,
mm-hmm.
irrespective whether they are living here. This could be the only country the child knows. And you're not going to give, if you're not giving that child citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And bear in mind that the parent, the father, is
a Malaysian citizen.
So it's a question of that little bit of the technicality of the marriage. Sometimes they are married overseas. And it's not recognized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and sometimes for technical reasons, sometimes if the person is on a work permit, they're not allowed to get married and they're in the clutches of the agent. So you have these technical difficulties for the marriage. And, and that's when you have the citizenship not being accorded to the child. And there are the statistics are there, which we were able to get in Parliament quite recently, where they said that from 2013 to 2018, there were about 45,000 applications below the age of 21 that were submitted, that was received by GPN. We didn't get the exact number that was approved or rejected, but okay. those were the number of applications. 45,000 is a big
number.
That
is a big number. And all these young children who are just, you know, like you said, like your own daughter, wondering what's wrong with them
yeah, yeah.
in inverted commas, and, you know, missing up on opportunities, you know, even if it's just for the experience of it, that is a great loss already.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what we really need is some clear-cut mechanisms, which is lacking at the moment.
Well, clear-cut mechanisms is one. I mean, as we know, usually bureaucratic procedures get tied up with the mechanisms of it all. But what clearly needs to happen is a constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Any last message you'd like to leave us with, besides the fact that we need to amend the constitution? Any last message you'd like to leave us with?
Well, Malaysia has an obligation because it signed up on the Convention on Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, CEDAW.
Yeah.
And it is one of the concluding observations as well that amend all provisions of the federal constitution that deny women the equal rights with respect to the transmission of their nationality to their children and their foreign spouses. So that's one. It's also obligated under the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And there have been about a few recommendations in the UPR as well. These are international treaties. And apart from these, it is, you know, even one Malaysian woman who's denied the right to pass on citizenship, she's not able to enjoy the full rights of a citizen.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, Bina.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Bina Ramanan. She's the lead coordinator and co-founder of the Foreign Spouses Support Group. And Suri Kemper, she's a program manager at Musawa. Suri, well, she had to go through a very long and tedious process to get citizenship for her daughter. And Bina is helping to lead the campaign through the FSSG to get gender equal citizenship for Malaysians. If we'd like to get involved in the campaign, you know, how can we best do that? How do we get in touch?
We have a Facebook page. So it's called Foreign Spouse Support Group. So you can get onto that page. We also have Children of Malaysians for Citizenship. It's another group, Facebook group, so you can get in touch with that, or just simply give us messages on Facebook, or we are available on foreignspouses@gmail.com. Send us a note and we will connect with you immediately.
We're on Twitter as well.
You're on Twitter as well?
Yes,
okay.
Right.
All right. So just look for Foreign Spouses Support Group.
That's right.
All right. All right. Thank you so much. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.